Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I'm holding in my hands a medical report from 1977. It was August of 1977. And in the middle of this little medical report, it says the following. On August 24th, saline infusion for an abortion was done, but was unsuccessful. And this baby, a couple days later, was born there in the hospital. And the intent of the doctor, of the staff, and even the intent, of course, of the mother, was that this would be an aborted baby. But God, in this particular case, had other plans, which leads to a miraculous story and just something that is we need to hear these stories as often as we possibly can to sensitize our hearts, to give God glory for what he's able to do and what happens from time to time in his grace and his mercy. And when I first heard about this story, I was riveted. I read, I investigated online. I watched videos, and it was a no-brainer. I sent a note to my intern, my production assistant, Callan. I'm like, please get Melissa Odin on here as fast as possible, and she was kind enough to take the time in her schedule, and she's very busy and just an incredible story, and what a pleasure and an honor and a blessing to say hello to Melissa Odin. Thank you, Melissa, for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Well, this is a pretty mind-boggling story. Before we dive into it, does it ever get, I hate to say old, sharing such an incredible testimony, but how does that, has it taken a toll on you over all these years, Melissa, just talking about this time and time and again?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because it's a bit surreal, you know, even though I live this and I work in this field of saving and transforming lives, and so I have to share my story a lot to make that happen. But yeah, it still feels like maybe this happened to someone else, and you know, there's the emotional toll, I think, Steve, that comes from that, right? Because it's an emotional thing to walk through. And, you know, the more we make ourselves vulnerable with our stories, then other people share theirs. And so there is that emotional toll when people share their story in return, but it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as soon as I started to begin to understand your story and to watch some of your videos and to listen to some of your interviews, this always comes, God brings this scripture to me all the time. And I'm sure it's been on your radar screen for a while. If you're in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where God's talking about, hey, we turn around and comfort people with the comfort that we've received from him. And what an incredible platform and opportunity he's given you to be a blessing to so many others, even through the darkness and pain of this story. But let's go back in time and tell us what was going on back there in August of 1977, and then bring us forward from there.
Yeah, almost 41 years ago now. Wow. I know that my birth mother actually had a saline infusion abortion forced upon her. I spent most of my life believing that it was her choice, but actually learned in recent years that it was her mother, my maternal grandmother, who was a prominent nurse in their community, who forced it upon her. They weren't happy about their 19-year-old college student daughter being pregnant out of wedlock, even though my biological parents were engaged to be married at the time, but my grandparents were not happy about that. And so my grandmother knew how to make a secret forced abortion take place. And so with the help of her friend and colleague, the abortionist, they forced it upon my birth mother, believing that no one would ever find out that it wasn't my birth mother's choice. And most certainly nobody would ever find out about me.
Yeah, and when did you finally find out kind of the whole story? And then we're gonna go back in time. We're going to flip a little around on this one. But when did you kind of find out the whole story about what happened? Because at first, you just were a little adopted girl.
Yeah, I was normal, right? of course, I know there's no such thing as normal, right? But I thought I was pretty typical and, you know, grew up very loved and raised to know Jesus from my youngest age. And it wasn't until I was about 14 that the truth about surviving that abortion came crashing down on me. And, you know, it was absolutely devastating. But from there, then it took almost another, almost another 20 years, really, for all of the truth about that abortion to unfold. And, you know, I just think a lot about scripture, right? People waited years upon years upon years, right, for things to happen in their lives. And the same is to be true in mine.
And what, let's go back to that when you found out that you weren't just an adopted 14-year-old girl your whole life, but your mom actually, and all you knew at the time, your mom actually tried to abort you. What did that do to you at the time, this young 14-year-old girl?
Absolutely wrecked me. You know, it's, that's probably the hardest part for me to share because it was such an absolute devastation. You know, I did not want to be this person years ago. I just wanted to be like everybody else, right? Back then, I didn't know that abortions could fail and children could live. And to think at the time that it was my birth mother's choice, it was absolutely just devastating. I couldn't understand how anybody could make that decision about my life. And so I was angry for the first time with my biological parents. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. I felt guilty for surviving when I knew the sheer numbers who didn't. And so, you know, I tried to run away from the truth about who I was and tried to run away from that rage of emotions that I felt. And so, you know, sinned heavily, developed an eating disorder, struggled with alcohol abuse, poor dating relationships, right? Everything I could do to distance myself from me. And the beauty is that God never took a step away, right? We always, you know, I think when we're in the midst of suffering, we say, where is God?
Right.
And I always say, he is right there. He is not the one who leaves. We are the ones who try to turn our backs on him.
Yeah, that's back to that age-old question of who moved. And it's never him. You know, he never leaves you, never forsakes you. And that's the amazing thing about it. I've been talking to friends recently, Melissa. When we come back, we're about to hit a break. When we come back from the break, I want to make sure we don't skip over how you, in fact, survived that saline abortion. But I was talking to somebody, some friends lately, and God's just kind of put this on my radar screen. To your point, when I look back and I go back, I was saved in 1994. My wife and I were saved within weeks or about a month of one another. And God saved me knowing everything I was still yet to do. All the sin, all the disappointment, even as a mature Christian, all the junk that I would do. And he still chose to save me. And because he never leaves, he never forsakes. We're talking to Melissa Odin, an incredible story about how God saved her and what he's been doing in her life ever since she survived that abortion back in 1977. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. We'll be right back. 'Cause you are more. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. It is 41 years ago in August of 1977 when a mom who was forced, and the baby didn't know this, a mom who was really forced to get an abortion, an saline abortion, which almost always basically burns the baby to death. In utero, it takes a few days, and then you deliver what's supposed to be a dead baby. In this case, that isn't what happened. And then that baby grew up and is a mother and a wife and a pro-life advocate and a sister in Christ. And her name is Melissa Odin, and she joins us by phone today. And again, Melissa, thank you so much. I know that you must be very busy, so thanks for taking some time to spend it with us.
No, I'm grateful. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So let's go back to that, back in August of 1977, because the plan was a saline abortion. It's brutal, and then you deliver a dead baby, but obviously that didn't happen. So what did happen, and how did you find out? How did you survive?
Interesting. I work with abortion survivors now around the world, and I've had contact approaching like 260 survivors, which, you know, in the face of, you know, a billion lives lost worldwide, I know 260 doesn't sound like much, but to me, it means everything. You know, of those survivors, most will not ever have any medical record of what happened to them. This isn't something that the medical professionals want to document. Most stories are passed along anecdotally through family, but yes, in my case, it's actually recorded in my medical records, as you read about at the beginning. My medical records indicate, you know, they tried over a 5-day period to induce my birth mother's labor with me. They injected that toxic salt solution and then were trying to induce her labor, you know, believing that I would be a successful abortion. And for some unknown reason, they did not succeed with inducing that labor until the fifth day. You know, I like to joke, maybe I'm just a little stubborn and I just wasn't going to budge. But on that fifth day, of course, here I soaked in it for even longer than what I was meant to. And so they induced her labor. I was delivered at St. Luke's Hospital in that final step. And of course, they believed that the abortion had succeeded in doing its job. But lo and behold, I was actually born alive.
So what did they do with you?
Yeah, that's the other million-dollar question, right? I wish we could tell this story and say, gosh, you know what, after she was born alive, people saw her humanity, but that's not how it went. I now know that my grandmother heavily monitored the abortion, and when I was born alive, she actually demanded that the other nurses leave me to die in that hospital room.
Man.
And you know, I know that's hard for people to hear, and that's where we also need to, of course, remind people of God's forgiveness for each and every one of us, including my grandmother. And I truly believe that and live that out from the bottom of my heart. But, you know, at that hospital, it was typical for children like me. If they survived that abortion procedure, they were left to die, and it was typically in a utility closet.
Yeah, literally, like the stories we've heard in the past and when, what led to, I'm sure you know her name. She testified several times in Congress, and that happened. She was involved in one of those situations and actually held the baby.
Yeah, Jill Stanek.
Jill Stanek, right. And then that drove her out, and that was all part of the Infant Born Alive Act and the big mess in Illinois with Obama. But you bring up forgiveness, and as you're learning more of these things, and not only, first, it's just your mom. And that she was trying to abort you. You didn't even know that that was under the direction of your grandmother. But as you came into possession of this knowledge, Melissa, how did you start to work through that in terms of forgiveness? Because I don't think there's anybody listening that would say, hey, listen, I don't think I could forgive that. But yet you have. So take us through that process, mm-hmm. because there's people listening or watching on Facebook who have a lot less to forgive people for who are unwilling to do it. So that's why I think
that's
this is so
important. True. Well, the key word is unwilling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We have to deliberately, consciously choose to forgive. And when we say things, right, like let go and let God, we're not just trying to be cliche, right? I mean, you have to truly let it go and know that God knows that person's heart. And I truly, you know, I still pray that my grandmother made it to heaven. She passed away a couple of years ago. I still pray that she made it there and that I see her there someday, because I wouldn't wish anyone the other place to be, right? No one deserves that. And so, you know, truly the piece of forgiveness is that it is deliberate, but it's also about recognizing that we're really no different than anyone else, right? My sins are different than my grandmother's, but I fall short. You know, every single day,
yeah.
I make mistakes every single day. And I think if we recognize that about ourselves, it allows us the opportunity to see that humanity in another person and forgive them in return.
Yeah, a Puritan writer once said that the seed of every sin exists in every human heart. And yeah. And you sit there and go, well, I could never. And then now you're like the Pharisee in the temple saying, oh, Father, thank you that I'm not like that sinner over there. Yet we all have the same capacity. And a friend of mine on Facebook Live, and I remember to ask you this question, thanks to Vince for reminding me. Where was your dad in all of this, Melissa, your birth dad?
Yeah, that's an important question, right? My biological father passed away about... Sorry, I got to think about what year it is more than anything. I'm getting old.
Wait till you get to be my age. It only gets worse.
My birth father passed away, unfortunately, about 10 years ago. And so I'll never know from his perspective everything that he knew. But what I do know, Steve, is that here my birth parents dated for 4 years throughout high school into college. They were engaged to be married. You know, I have no doubt they were one another's great love. But when my birth mother discovered that she was pregnant with me, my grandmother sat the two of them down, screamed so loud that it made the windows rattle in the house, and people have recounted that story. And he was never allowed to talk to her again. They spoke one time after the abortion, and that was simply he was asking where the engagement ring went, and my birth mother had to tell him that her family made her sell it to help pay for the medical costs.
Oh, man. One thing
you can't make this stuff up, right?
No, you can't. It's so sad. So did I know that, and we're going to get to this, that you eventually met your birth mom. So did you never then have a chance to meet your birth father?
I never did. You know, I found out who my birth parents were in 2007. I did a lot of searching, started searching when I was about 19, found them when I was about 30 in 2007. And when I found my birth father, I discovered we were living in the same city. You know, God has been so gracious to me. And, you know, we often say, right, God has his fingerprints all over things, but I say God has his handprints.
Yeah, no kidding.
All over.
And so where did you take us down the road, and we'll hit a break here in about a minute and a half, but take us down the road of how you work through forgiveness, starting with your mom. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was wrong. Just tee this off, because we're against the break right now. So just where did that start? Like, how old were you when you started to work down that road?
14. I mean, truly, the seeds of forgiveness had been planted by my adoptive parents long ago.
Yeah, through the gospel itself. We're talking to Melissa Oden. I'm going to put you on hold right quick, Melissa. Talking to Melissa Oden about her survival from an abortion in 1977, forgiveness, and everything else God's done since then. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Just an incredible, just praising the Lord today for our opportunity, my opportunity, your opportunity to hear this story from Melissa Oden. And I was just saying off of during the commercial break, you know, we've been doing Facebook Live for a little over 2 years now. My very first Facebook Live in my studio was with Ann Graham Lotz. That was literally on tax day, April 15th of 2016. So you look at that, that's probably 700 shows. 365, yeah, let's say 700, 730 Facebook Live shows. I've done plenty. If you've been listening to this show for any time, you know I do. There's a lot of intense shows, a lot of intense content. God brings us some amazing testimonies. I've never had a show with an abortion survivor on before. And yesterday, on the heel of yesterday's show about Love Life, who are now all over North Carolina, and the incredible work that God is doing through that, which is kind of a, as if you watched the show yesterday or listen, you know that Love Life kind of works with all the different pro-life groups and is a real prayer effort, but also mentoring women and families that choose life, mentoring them and adoption and fostering. It's holistic and it's amazing. And that was yesterday. And we roll into this. So here's what's going on Facebook Live, 700 of them. Not once have we had a technical problem like we're having today. Last week, we couldn't connect. We couldn't connect with Truth Radio in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, who syndicates the show. And all that stuff blew up. And then today on Facebook Live, we've got a delay between the audio and the video. And we have all good stuff. I mean, we invested in a new Mevo camera and a new laptop computer and all that to run it in. And this has never happened before. I don't usually start looking for a demon under every rock, but I can guarantee you Satan hates this story. Every demon hates this story. The forces of darkness hate this story. Planned Parenthood hates this story. And so we soldier on and God gets the glory. But I just wanted to let you know, I'm not quick to cry foul when it comes to demonic activity, but I'm pretty confident today there's a lot of that going on. Anyway, Melissa, thanks for being with us. Sorry I had to make you listen to all of that.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, I would have to say my apologies. It tends to follow me sometimes. But,
I'm sure it does. So, all right. So take us through, because this is such an important part of the story, forgiveness. Forgiveness for your mom. And you find out, okay, my mom tried to kill me. And then you find out, well, actually, no, it was my grandmother. And your dad was kind of a helpless victim and all of that. Not as much as you, but to a certain extent. So how did you go down the road? And how did God work in you, Melissa, to get you to the point where you've fully forgiven all of them?
Well, and it's a process, right? I mean, you know, at the age of 14, my ability to forgive was probably, you know, just the very basic, right? Recognizing that I was a sinner. Here I was in the midst of my own pain and suffering, sinning up one side and down the other, right? So that's what, you know, really made me turn to them and say, oh my goodness, you know what? I'm a lot like them. So that was my first step at the age of 14, is saying, you know what? Here I am making mistakes. They made their own. I get that. I forgive you. And that set the stage for me to go looking for them. But it's, you know, it's interesting because the more I get to know the story, the easier it is to forgive. And that may not make sense to people, right? Because you kind of hear the story and go, oh my goodness, that's even worse than you could have imagined, right?
Yeah.
But like I tell this to our 10-year-old daughter because she's raised so deeply in this. But any truth that I find out will not change the love that I have for them as human beings. Nothing that I will find out will shake that. It simply will not. And so the more I find out, the more it simply just adds to their humanity and my opportunity to forgive them. Does that make sense?
It does. It does, and that comes with spiritual maturity when God continues to open our eyes wider and wider, which brings us back to our own salvation most of the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we're a culture full of pretty prideful people, aren't we, to think that maybe somehow we're so much better than everyone else or we're so much further saved.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Gosh, what good it would do everyone to be humbled.
Oh, man, no kidding. And we're talking to Melissa Oden, who survived an abortion attempt on her life back in 1977. MelissaOden.com is her website, O-H-D-E-N. And by the way, an incredible book, You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir. We're going to talk about that here in a second. That's available on Amazon. I just put a link up for it on Facebook Live. But you just Google it, and you'll get right there. You Carried Me by Melissa Oden, O-H-D-E-N. And her website also, you can get that information, MelissaOden.com. So take us into the part of the story where you actually find your birth mother and are reunited, and what that was like.
Yeah, so I found out who my birth mother was in 2007. Had a little contact with her parents about that time, but they had made it clear they were completely estranged. They would not pass along any messages that I had for her. And, you know, I spent the next 6 years really just, you know, trusting in God's will, knowing that I may never hear from her. And I had to live in peace with that. And of course, in perfect God's timing, suddenly in 2013, one of her cousins actually contacted me. That's how I found out that the abortion was forced and my grandmother was responsible for all of those things. And you know, that's truly when I found out probably the biggest bombshell yet, Steve, and that was that my birth mother had lived over 30 years of her life believing that I had died that day.
Wow.
At the hospital.
And so take us to that day when you actually met her.
Yeah, so we spent a few years communicating, building walls of trust and love with one another. Truly, she needed to trust me. She didn't believe that I could love her. She didn't believe that I could forgive any of them. And so I spent years building that. And so then we met face-to-face for the first time back in 2016. And, you know, it's hard to describe to people, but I guess the briefest version I could give you is that when we met face-to-face for the first time, it was one of those moments that was just so sacred, where you know that this is God ordained, that it's nothing to do with you, right? And that God is looking down on that moment, knowing that he had set that day in motion all of those decades before.
Yeah, and so was your very first contact with her like an email or a phone call? What was it?
Yeah, the first time we contacted each other, it was actually by email, and we exchanged letters and emails and, you know, sent photos for a number of years, and it was very difficult, as you can probably imagine.
Oh, my God. Well, I can't. I mean, I can't imagine it at all, and for obvious reasons, but do you remember kind of what you said, your very first outreach to your birth mom? What did you do with that? Hey, Steve, can you give me some advice? Sorry, Melissa, can't help you with this one.
Yeah, I can laugh about it, right? Because I've often told people, right, there is no handbook on how to deal with situations like this.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my next book, How to Handle Awkward Situations. I don't know, with grace. But one of the first things I did was I let her know how long I had been looking for her, that I had forgiven her, that I loved her, and that I had all of my medical records, and if she wanted any information, I wanted to share that with her. And that absolutely floored her, because she wasn't expecting me to have all of the information that I had, and she wasn't expecting me to go, hey, can I give you what I know?
Yeah, did she want to know any of that, or was that something that she would
naturally say,
oh, man?
No, she did want to know. She, after she found out that I was alive, she started searching for records and hit a lot of dead ends. And so here I had pieces of the puzzle that she was looking for. And so that really allowed her to start to trust me. And that very first Christmas, we started communicating in like February or March. That Christmas, I sent her a photo album, which is serious pictures, right, from my infancy up to my adulthood.
Wow.
And on the back page, I left it blank and said, you know what, here is a place for us to have memories together in the future.
Yeah, and how did she kind of express what she was going through as she found this out? Now she's getting to know this daughter that she thought died, you know, all these years ago back in 1977. How did she express what she was going through?
I have to laugh at my birth mother because she's a little rough around the edges, which I appreciate that she is just very blunt, right? But that bluntness really is to her amount of hurt, right? She's still hurting. The fact that I'm alive is an incredible blessing to her, but it does not undo what was done to her and what was done to me. And she has the horrible memories of everything that she went through and all of the heartache. And so, you know, she's pretty no holds barred about her gratefulness that I'm alive, but her own personal struggles to forgive her family.
Yeah, where is she at with her faith, if you don't mind me asking?
You know, she was raised in a very faithful home, right, in their opinion. They went to church every Sunday. Right? Everything
yeah, join the crowd.
Great on, yeah, exactly. Look great on the outside. And so she had a bad taste in her mouth when it came to faith. But now I hear her saying things like, maybe there really is a God and maybe he really does love me.
Great progress. We're talking to Melissa Oden, melissaoden.com, OHDEN. Melissa, I've got you on hold. We're going to pick it up there and talk about what she's doing today for the Life Cause.
Well, I got a message. I got a song. Can I get a witness? Tell me what's going on.
Welcome back. This is Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Definitely have a witness. Definitely have a song, although you don't want me to sing it. But one of the things I want to do for you, hopefully it would bless you, is the Daily Dose Devotional, which I've written about 380 of those. And we put those out Monday through Friday, just an email thing, and I also put it on Facebook. And just starting, because I've written a bunch of those in the past, I think the last time I wrote a full series was about 4 years ago, and we just started a brand new series in the Book of Proverbs, which I'm writing. Every other day I'm writing several of them, and it's interesting to write now versus writing devotionals 5 years ago. As God has continued to mature me in his grace and his mercy, but going into Proverbs has just been awesome. And so if you want to jump on that, this is just an email that you would get each morning. We send it out at about 7 a.m. Eastern time. It's really easy now. You don't have to go to the website. You don't have to just text the word dose. And I know that we're all a little older and technologically challenged, but just text the word dose to D-O-S-E, dose to 66866. So that's the number you text it to, like your friend. That would be like their phone number. So text the word dose, D-O-S-E, to 66866, and boom, you'll get a little reply. We just need your email address, and bada bing, you'll be on the list, and you'll start getting the daily dose. So we just started in the Book of Proverbs. We're on to just the beginning of chapter 2, and we'll probably be looking about, this is going to take me a while. There's 31 chapters in the Book of Proverbs. On average, I'll probably write five or six, maybe sometimes seven, as much as eight devotionals out of one chapter. So that's a lot. So there's a good chance we'll be in there together for most of the remainder of the year. But God's really done a great work there, and it blesses a lot of people. I hear great things all the time. It's not about me. I'm just an instrument. It's all about God. So text the word DOSE, D-O-S-E, to 66866, and we'll get you on the list. Talking to Melissa Oden today, one of the most incredible stories we've had the pleasure to be a part of and listen to and learn from here on about 11 years of doing radio. Melissa survived the abortion attempt on her life back in 1977, saline abortion, which can be very nasty because they're basically trying to burn the child to death and then deliver a dead baby. That wasn't the case, and God just did a miracle, nothing short of that at the time. Melissa, so with that, with a saline abortion, then we're going to move on and talk about what you're doing today. And again, her website, really easy to remember, Melissa Oden. Melissa Oden, O-H-D-E-N, MelissaOden.com is her website. And her book that came out last year, You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir, is available on Amazon. I put the link up on Facebook as well. But because normally with a saline abortion, Melissa, there's all kinds of damage done to the child. So were you basically healthy when you were born?
I wasn't initially. So like many premature infants, I suffered from severe respiratory and liver problems. I suffered from seizures for a period of time. The doctors actually thought that I had a fatal heart defect initially because of the amount of distress that my body was under. But I pulled through very quickly from what the nurses have told me. And so I went home to my adoptive family less than 3 months after surviving that failed Wow. abortion. And I am perfectly healthy today.
And not only perfectly healthy, but you're a wife and a mother.
Yes, it's an incredible blessing. Yeah, the doctors don't know a lot about how abortion procedures like this in particular are going to affect someone long-term health-wise. And so they always said, you know, even though you're perfectly healthy, you may not ever be able to conceive or carry children. Mm-hmm. But I have. And our daughters are 10 and almost 4, and you know, I am absolutely blessed in every area of my life.
Wow. So a birth of a new child, we have 4 children, and when they're born, it's just unbelievably emotional, spiritually impactful and heavy. What was that? That had to have been even times 100 or something for you, given the fact that you had survived an abortion. So what was that like for you and your husband all of a sudden, and then when your birth mom too, but specifically you?
Yeah, well, and I gave birth to our oldest daughter at the same hospital where my life was supposed to end. So if you want to talk about
Now you got to be making it up at this point, Melissa.
And that was all God once again. So yes, that was absolutely terrifying yet and redemptive at the same time, right? And that's truly another example of, you know, doing something that you are so scared to do, but knowing that that is what God has called you to do. And I'm so thankful.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're talking again to Melissa Oden, MelissaOden.com. That's O-H-D-E-N. And then also it's easy to get her book on Amazon, You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir. So you've been very active, testified in Congress a couple years ago. And tell us about the work that God has you doing these years in the pro-life movement.
Yeah, I gave up my career as a social worker about 10 years ago to accept my calling. And that is to, you know, share this story, advocate wherever God calls me, whether it's at the federal level, the state level, in another country, writing books, writing blogs. I work with survivors behind the scenes, helping them know they're not alone, educating the public, helping them find appropriate support for one another. The list could go on and on. I fundraise for a lot of pregnancy centers and pro-life organizations. That's probably one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, following God is just truly the most exhilarating experience anyone can ever have.
That's right. And if you're going to follow him in obedience, it will rarely be boring. If you throw your yes on the table, God's like, okay, are you sure? And yeah, Lord, I'm sure. And then it's amazing what can happen. You testified in front of Congress because I want to get your take on Planned Parenthood. And I'm sure when the Center for Medical Progress, when all those videos, the sting videos were coming out about Planned Parenthood selling baby parts, and actually a buddy of mine, Troy Newman with Operation Rescue, who you may know, he's been a friend of mine for years, but he was one of the people behind that with David DeLayden. But when you testified in front of Congress, and you didn't pull any punches. I'm going to read from your testimony. You said, I'm here today to share my story, to not only highlight the horror of abortion taking place at Planned Parenthood, but to give a voice to the other survivors like me, and most importantly, to give a name, a face, and a voice to the hundreds of thousands of children who will have their lives ended by Planned Parenthood this year alone. You went on to say, I've long believed that if my birth mother's abortion would have taken place at a Planned Parenthood, I would not be here today. Completing over 300,000 abortions a year provides them with the experience to make sure that failures like me don't happen. So how do you feel about Planned Parenthood, the people that work there? Because it's really easy. I share this on the air often, Melissa, where part of my flesh will react and say, hey, you know what? Enjoy your time burning in hell. That's my fleshly first sanctimonious in some ways reaction. But then my gospel reaction comes in there and it changes that whole conversation. But what's it like for you to consider, look at, talk to people, and engage with an organization in whatever way you can, like Planned Parenthood?
You know, one of the times that I testified at the state level, there was somebody from Planned Parenthood there testifying right in opposition to me. And when they were done, I went up to shake their hand. I kid you not, went up to shake their hand and just say, you know what, it is nice to meet you. They turned on their heel and stomped off.
Yeah.
And so I get that. So for me, I absolutely righteously get angry about the abortion industry and the fact that 3,000 children will lose their lives to abortion today. I'm angry about that, righteously angry. But I don't hate the people who are in the midst of it, because I know how they are blinded by the words of the abortion industry, how they're blinded by the words of our culture that tells them that it's a choice, it's a right, that it's not a human right, all of those things. And so some of my best friends are former abortion clinic workers and managers. And we band together to highlight the evil of abortion.
We have a couple minutes left, Melissa, and it would be dereliction of duty on my part if I didn't ask you to speak directly to, because I guarantee you, you know this as well as anybody else and better than most people, that there are women and some men listening right now around in 12 different states. And there's women right now that are listening that are post-abortive. They made that choice. Their baby died. They're involved in that. What's your message to them?
That God loves you and your child loves you. Just as I love my biological mother, your child loves you too. And, you know, there are so many great opportunities to experience healing, whether it's your local pregnancy center, maybe something that your church offers. There's just even great books that you can access on Amazon, like Surrendering the Secret. You do not need to suffer in silence with the pain of your abortion. It is okay to talk about it, and you need to heal.
Yeah, and that's a message that we can't broadcast enough. And it's important when we talk about and we thunder against abortion, as we should, and call it what it is, that we never forget that we always, and whether you're in a pulpit, in a church, at a pregnancy life care center banquet, wherever it is, the numbers are definitely that you've got post-abortive women listening. We always have to have both sides of that message, to come against abortion, to come against that darkness, yes, to come against that murder, but also to continually remind women and the men involved that you have not committed the unpardonable sin, and God still loves you. He died for you. He died for you knowing you were going to do it. And he loves you, and he's calling out to you. That is the gospel of grace. That is the essence of who God is and who his son is. And you're such a wonderful example of that, Melissa. And thank you so much for me and for everybody else listening and are going to watch this or hear the podcast later. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you hopefully another time soon. That was Melissa Oden, melissaoden.com, O-H-D-E-N, and her book, You Carried Me, A Daughter's Memoir by Melissa Oden, that just came out last year. And there's not much I can add to that at all. One more reminder, if you want, and you need, and we all need it, a little daily dose of God's Word in the morning. And interestingly enough, when I'm writing these, you can assume most of the time I'm slaying myself first. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I'm writing it, and then I'm sharing my pain with everybody else. But God works through all of that. So if you want to jump on the Daily Dose list, we send that out each weekday morning. It's easy now. Just text the word DOSE, D-O-S-E, to 66866. Text the word DOSE to 66866. This is Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show, and God willing, we'll talk to you again real soon.